Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast. And up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Welcome to the Creep Dive.
No, you're welcome to the Creep Dive, Jen. It's a main episode, and I was listening to a podcast there recently, and I was like, they actually tell people about their podcast at the top of the show in case it's anyone's ever first time.
Occasionally we do that.
We do it sometimes.
We like to keep them guessing, though. A lot of the time we just go straight in, no names, no explanation.
That's Sophie White, best-selling author. That's Cassie Delaney.
You're Jen O'Dwyer.
And I'm Jen O'Dwyer. And we... collectively, are the Creep Dive. This is a podcast full of strange things you may not know and things you might know.
It's a podcast.
And things we may have told you before.
It's an audio equivalent of slipping your hand into the pocket of a stranger who is wearing a trench coat.
Exactly. It's things found in pockets in secondhand clothes stores.
Oh God, yeah.
That's
dark.
Kind of the stuff that we're... Do you remember that time I found...
Knickers, yes.
Two pairs of children's knickers in a gigantic man's sheepskin coat. That was upsetting.
I'm willing to give that coat the benefit of the doubt.
I mean, yeah. Anything could have happened there.
Well, for starters, it could have been a woman who enjoyed an oversized man's trench.
Yeah.
In which case, when are you not pocketing knickers of youths?
True.
However.
I said, that's actually, I just.
Still
I basically just made an assumption that a woman couldn't be a pedo. Mm. And of course they can. We love to see women doing well in male-dominated fields.
Right. That sums us up, I'd say. And that's the end of the show.
Thank you for your support. If you'd like more, it's patreon.com/thecreepdive.
If you are interested, we have just done an episode on the Nickelodeon Creeps, Dan Schneider, Brian Peck. We've also have an update on Kerry Jade Smith. That's over on the Patreon as we speak.
And you can get this episode ad free.
Over there too.
If
I think
you patronize
it. How much are we? About £4 a month?
4, 5, 6, who knows?
One of us probably should know, but none.
I think there's options.
Now, what do we have this week? Do you have a little update for us?
I've got an update on a creep that's coming in courtesy of Elizabeth Young. Hey, Elizabeth. Elizabeth has supplied us with a lot of gold in the creep dive past, but she's given us an update on our old friend, Clive Palmer. You might remember that Clive is an Australian billionaire.
Oh,
who longs to revive
Titanic.
Titanic 2, the sequel. So
this guy was gas.
We chatted about him before. For more than a decade, Clive has been the driving force behind plans to build Titanic 2, and a pretty exact replica.
And he can, because he's got so much money.
He's got super loads of money. Just a recap on the Titanic, ill-fated ship, sank in April of 1912. More than 2,200 souls aboard, 1,500 or thereabouts, died. Horrible deaths. We may remember that James Cameron's Titanic, Leo described dying in the North Atlantic as being cold, like 1,000 knives stabbing you all over your body, in a bit of foreshadowing in the script and earlier in the movie.
He goes ahead and does it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was describing his own fate.
The door truly was big enough for the two of them.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That has been proven.
I saw that disproven by an engineer.
Well,
who talked about the, you know, the engineering aspect of
the
why
dimensions.
That door would have sank if the two of them had got up on it.
Now, could he just have held on to it? And that's
he
what
did
happened.
Hold on to it.
Oh, I see.
And then
he just...
she had to snap his hands off it to set him free.
Look, we'd all do it.
And then she lived a very long and fulfilling life.
She did.
Good for Rose. Do it, Bikuda. Anyway, so it was. I think it still stands as one of the most dangerous voyages in human history, and obviously a lot of hubris going on. They had in the promo leading up to it dubbed it the unsinkable ship.
That's right.
Yeah, an original viral moment.
Absolutely,
was that sinking? I suppose. Everyone loves a bit of dramatic irony. No one more so than Clive, I think. So he started the plans for Titanic 2 in 2012, which would have marked the centenary. Plans got shelved because it is a cursed ship.
Mm.
So the project is cursed. And then he revived it again in 2018. And now, 2024, 6 years later, he's done it again. That's not an Australian accent.
So when we last spoke about Clive, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
The doomed submarine happened the following day. After we recorded it, we put it out. The submarine full of people going down to see Titanic imploded.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing by ourselves.
I
might be wrong.
No. I never investigated if that was the case, but creeps in the comments
confirmed.
Alerted us to the fact that we had spoken about Titanic. The thing is, on the Creep Dive, we're never more than a few weeks away from a Titanic mention.
It crops
so
up.
It turns statistically, it's, you know, likely that we will predict any and all Titanic news.
Mm-hmm.
Clive's back. Big relaunch of the project last Wednesday. He called a press conference at Sydney Opera House and in front of Sydney Harbour. He was like, I'm gonna do it. Am I in Australia? He told local media, it's kind of sad that this is an article in CNN, so he has gotten out there, but he called the press conference with just some local lads. He said, so he said that it's a lot more fun to do the Titanic than it is to sit at home and count my money.
I love him.
So he earns about $500 million
a year
in mining royalties every year.
What's he mining? God.
Now, I presume they're dollary dues. So I don't know what that is in real money, but
it's probably the same. 35 euro.
Yeah.
So yeah, Clive is just kind of flat out trying to figure out how to spend this cashola. And
well, Clive.
So
have I got an investment opportunity for you?
So yeah, when he first brought the idea of Titanic 2 out in 2012, everyone was like, he's rich enough and stupid enough to probably do this. And then, unfortunately, the pandemic put the kibosh because obviously travel was off the menu. And he had some other issues because as you'd expect of a man like Clive, he's got lots of court cases going on.
Being sued a lot.
He also was dabbling in politics here and there.
I remember that.
He took on the entire state government of Western Australia over...
Is this Jurassic
the
Park?
Pandemic, over the pandemic restrictions.
Because I think that was tied into him. He was building Jurassic Park.
Yeah, very him. Yeah.
And I reckon that was something to do with that. Because if they were restricted, he couldn't open his park.
And he also sued the same government. Imagine just meeting all the same people over and over in court over different suings that you're doing. But basically, they blocked his access to compo. My compo over some iron ore project. And he's also now brought that grievance to an international tribunal and wants $200 billion in damages from the federal government. I presume that might bankrupt Australia.
How fucking annoying just to know that he's going to pump all that money into a gigantic boat.
Obviously, he was involved in local politics, much like Jen, O-D-W-Y-E-R. Famously, he spent millions of dollars on his campaign. Very few votes.
I see.
And so anyway, cruise ships are at it again, as we know. Are they all still on the 9 month cruise?
100%. They must be, yeah.
I haven't heard much from them lately.
So they, do you remember they hoovered up a load of the TikTokers who were talking about it?
Yeah.
So there's loads of them on there now, TikToking away, but it's getting more and more boring.
Yeah, I haven't checked in on it in a long time.
So a couple of people have died, natural causes.
No.
And yeah. I don't think anyone's fallen off the boat yet. That'll be the next thing.
Okay.
But they're really cracking down on the TikTokers. There's been a lot of infighting because the people who are there to enjoy the cruise do not want to be featured on somebody's tickety-tock.
Fair enough.
Don't want to be widely mocked, would you believe?
And the staff are just like, would you ever just fuck off?
Oh.
So I think it's kind of mellowed.
It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be staff on such a ship of annoying doses.
Wow.
So anyway, Palmer is hoping to begin work first quarter of 2025. He's got, you know, he's trying to, what do? You don't audition building companies. He's looking for a building company.
He's put it out to Tinder.
He's put it out to Tinder. Thank you. So capacity will be similar to that of the original Titanic, 2,345 passengers. The ship itself is nearly same dimensions, slightly wider. A lot of first class passengers on this ship.
Not true.
They will be encouraged to dress for the times, the 1900s. Yes. Not mandatory, said a spokesperson.
Yes.
I think what happened probably was Clive said it's mandatory and a spokesperson just intercepted.
He's like, no, you can do what you want.
You can wear whatever you like.
Third class passengers will be treated to stew and mash at long tables in a communal dining room as they were on the original boat.
That would be so way more crack.
You want to spend a lot of money to travel in steerage and experience those conditions.
You can.
You absolutely can.
It going to go up? Where do you remember where the Titanic actually
set sail from Belfast?
Where did it crash? Or
it crashed somewhere in the middle of the North Atlantic, I believe.
And if they're taken off from Australia, presumably they're staying
southern hemisphere.
They have to go near a couple of icebergs or else it won't be exciting.
I agree.
Yeah, I don't know what the actual... You're right. I don't know what the itinerary
North
is.
North and South Pole.
But obviously, it just seems like it's absolutely going to end in disaster. Watch this space.
Thank you,
Can't subs. Wait.
Okay. Cassandra Delaney's been teasing us with Nazis
for ages. I'm going to take you down a long and dark road. Did you ever wonder where the Nazis all fled to after World War II?
Well, we've discussed it a few times.
Where
a
did
lot of them
go?
Fled to institutions in America where they were allowed to discard their old Nazi identity and become proponents of America's eugenics program.
Yeah, so a lot of the scientists went off.
A lot of problematic
science. The people who could get hired again sort of did.
Anyone that the Americans were like, these could be useful. Also, hey, all the Americans.
Hi.
1 in 10 Creep Dive listeners are American.
Oh,
it's actually terrifying.
It's very interesting, isn't it? It's actually slightly more.
Fascinating.
Uh-huh. So I'm going to tell you the story of Paul Schaefer Schneider. One unfortunate, because we just did Dan Schneider, not to tarnish all Schneiders with the same brush, but seems like a tough name to pull off. Schaefer, we're going back to, was born in Germany. And he was like your average kind of Nazi. He was described as a poor and clumsy student. His family were Lutheran. And when he was younger, he had an accident with a fork in which he lost his right eye.
Sorry.
Like he was like trying to do something with his shoes.
And like, sorry, you've like,
I'm just giving you his background.
There are three different locations on a body.
What?
He was trying to do...
I heard on a podcast he was trying to like tie his shoelaces or something. He was doing something weird with a fork and shoes. And the fork slipped and it poked out his eye, right?
Oh my God.
So it's
It's giving Ruprecht in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah, so he had a glass eye, which is obviously kind of... When World War II was, you know, during World War II, he served... as carrying stretchers of wounded Germans in a field hospital that was in France. Mm-hmm. But he claimed then that the glass eye was a war wound.
Okay.
So he's real big fan of Hitler. Like, okay. He's really
dear.
Into...
dear.
Yeah, I mean, he was in a youth group when he was younger. Do you know, he was totally indoctrinated into the whole thing. Had a lot of bad traits himself. So following World War II, he then served as a young people's leader in the Evangelical Free Church.
After World War II?
Yes. So he
was never prosecuted for any war crimes or anything.
No,
like that.
No, no. But he served as kind of an aide.
He was too young, World War I. Was he a youth? You're
talking about World War II at the moment.
World War II. No, he wasn't prosecuted for anything, and because he was able to freely move away. And the issue with this guy is that he just coincidentally met a lot of bad people that helped him to do a lot of bad things.
You're excusing him.
No, no, no. I'm not excusing him, but I'm just saying from his background, there was other issues that were never looked into, because I guess, like, beyond being Nazi, this guy was also an abuser. He was just an awful man. And I think everyone's just like, Nazi, just get rid of him. They didn't look too deeply into his history. He was removed from his position as a leader in the church after rumors arose that he was molesting young boys.
Oh, Jesus.
So then he,
a lot of boxes.
Yeah, then he went on the move again. Went on the move again as a preacher and singer, traveling around Germany and preaching. So during the 1950s, then he became a big follower of an American preacher, William Branham, who was one of the founders of the post-World War II healing revival, who was also a really great friend of Jim Jones.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So first coincidence. So Schaefer had been following his ministry from Germany and was very excited when Branham came over to visit Germany then in 1955. So Schaefer and other members of his church served as his personal security during this visit of his European tour. So Branham's whole thing was a strict, you know, adherence to the Bible. A woman's duty was to obey her husband. And he had all these like, you know, kind of doomsday visions such that LA was going to be sinking beneath the ocean. So Branham was going on these revival campaigns across Europe and Germany during the 1950s. And Schaefer became a really good friend of his and started on this whole idea of a return to a more pristine time of racial and religious purity. So still really upholding those horrendous Nazi values. So strong ties between Schaefer and Branham, who again was one of Jim Jones's leading advisors.
No way. That's mad.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And we all know how that one turned out.
Thanks to Jen's incredible episode about it.
Yeah.
Which is not surprising. Jim Jones was completely embedded in politics and a very well lit up a room, lads.
It's funny though, because These guys are all about purity and presumably like white supremacist ideals and stuff. And Jim Jones actually was an activist in the Black Civil Rights Movement when that was happening in the States.
So how did they marry the two?
It's kind of weird, isn't it? That they were just kind of like, look.
Yeah, I mean, like at the core of what they're preaching really is misogyny and totalitarianism. So it's not necessary. Like, I don't know if white supremacy was up the like a lot of it is about power and, you know, the women's place and men being in power. So, I think that was like, their bonding.
I like the cut of your jib.
Exactly. So like one of Branham's teachings was that, you know, illness was sin and demons entrenched people's bodies. And Schaefer claimed that at one of Branham's meetings, he experienced healing and thereafter began to preach very strongly that all sin and illness was the result of demonic possession.
I mean, accurate. The one other thing about Jim Jones before we move away, in case that sounded like I was like, oh, he's a hero of black people. Like, he was a megalomaniac and in pursuit of power and saw a group of people who were marginalized and disenfranchised by the government they were living under. And it was pure cynicism, opportunism, most likely.
Yeah.
Wanted to get that said in case it sounded like we were a Jim Jones stan podcast.
Apology group. Yes.
The sunglasses were cool.
So in the background, Schaefer is gathering a number of followers, and the thing about him is he's setting up initiatives that seem very positive. So he has like a children's home, an orphanage, and his early followers were predominantly made up of war widows and their children who were refugees from Soviet occupied East Prussia. So in 1959 he created the Private Social Mission, a supposedly charitable organization. Now, that same year, he was charged with sexually abusing two young boys.
Oh, wow.
So he was charged and a warrant issued for his arrest by local authorities in Germany. He then fled the children's home in West Germany with some of his followers to the Middle East to relocate his congregation. And it was there in the Middle East that he came into contact with the Chilean ambassador to Germany, who invited him to come over to Chile. So in January 1961, he pops up in Chile, where the government at the time was led by the conservative president, Jorge Alessandri, who granted him permission to create a new society. So this became Dignidad Beneficent Society on a farm outside of Parral. So Schaefer managed to purchase over 4,000 acres of a ranch in which he and 10 of his followers began to prepare for a congregation to come over and visit them. So very similar to how cults and colonies set up. They get a nice big piece of rural land. People go over, they set up things like schools and care, and then people come over and settle.
And it's Christian, Catholic.
It's not Catholic, it's Christian. So he's evangelical, very, you know, Christian, and quite seemingly from the outset progressive, because I think that his whole motivation is to bring young children together.
Oh, Cass, I see.
Rather than anything else, right?
Yeah. So he has to be female friendly.
He's female friendly,
get the mothers on board to gain access. So the Chilean ambassador did or didn't know or did or didn't care that there were charges of child molestation?
Hard to know, because he encounters Schaefer in the Middle East. I don't think Schaefer is going forth and being like, I ran away from Germany because there's these sexual assault allegations, which at the time as well, in the 50s, incredible.
That there was a charge. Allegations brought. Absolutely.
And a charge, you know.
Yes, Kat. So it must have been very bad.
In post-World War II Germany, for it to be acknowledged is, I think, mad.
He may have been in the 60s.
So it's in the 60s that he surfaced in Chile. So between the 50s.
Chile was like a few years ahead of their kind of big coup.
Yes.
That happened in the early 70s. So,
but also remember Germany during that time as well. He was probably, aside from the sexual assaults, a problematic character anyway.
Yeah, I mean, he was a big Nazi.
Exactly. So it was in Germany's interest that he disappeared.
Get rid.
And maybe that's what brought the...
Yeah, kind of. I think they had a lot more to deal with, that he wasn't... He was probably low down the rung of people that they needed to look after. And it was the kind of thing as well, I think, for a lot of it he was seen to be doing good by bringing these war widows together and bringing together a congregation that seemed to be all about righteous Christian living. So in 1963, then, 230 members of his congregation traveled over to Chile in the first wave of people. There was another two waves in 1966 and 1973. So, you know, there are hundreds of people coming over to live in this kind of congregation, new colony. Again, the decision to move to Chile and move people over is a strong influence from William Branham, who had predicted an imminent nuclear war that would devastate the Western nations. So people are terrified after World War II. He's promising this, you know, this whole new righteous land over in Chile where people can settle. He set things up like schools and hospitals and different things. And it seems like a very safe place to go to with God looking after them. They're preaching such things as anti-communism, and the society gradually evolved into what became known as Colonia Dignidad.
Can I ask, do you think that the congregants knew what he had been doing during the war?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think the congregation were aware of the, because the sexual assault charges had come from his time operating an orphanage. I don't think they were massively aware of.
And I mean, at the time, like, trying to find out about somebody, really hard. Like, do you know what I mean? There's no Facebook, Bebo.
Exactly.
There's no, yeah.
And to the outside world, this colony, it seemed like a prime example of like efficiency, cleanliness and communal work. It became a profitable agricultural production. So they basically, he was quite smart, went over and they started farming. And within the first couple of years, they became quite profitable, which meant that they could have a very efficient and very well-staffed hospital. It has its own press operations, which recorded and broadcast videos showing happy residents amid celebrations and commemorations. They had men dedicated to farm work. Women and girls were working on embroidery and preparing other foods. And diplomats at the German embassy ignored reports of any violence and crime and praised it as a model colony.
This is mad. It is like fully, he's like the bargain bin Jim Jones.
Yeah, exactly.
He probably was so pissed off that like, his cult isn't as, you know, isn't the Uber cult that Jim got going.
But does he have, obviously you're going to tell us, but does he have the same sort of suicidal, mass suicidal inclinations?
No, we'll get, it kind of starts to unravel. I think at the start, it's just a pursuit of power and he's actually quite happy. People are, you know, it says that in reality, it was a fear-based colony where members were barred from interacting with the world outside of the community. And he cut them off entirely from the outside world. But there are so many benefits to being in this society for families and for like there's schools, there's hospitals, there's work. It's, you know, it's obviously he's kind of this totalitarian leader, but like he's not Hitler. He's not like people aren't getting murdered in the colony.
It's lovely weather down in Chile.
Yeah. Beautiful. And great farming.
Is he liked within his community?
It seemed to be that he was, but then things started to unravel and the more the colony went on, the more insane rules he started to implement. So he barred the contact from the outside world. He also then ordered the division of families. So parents weren't allowed to talk to their children.
Oh, here we go.
And they did not know their siblings.
What the fuck? How was he just taking one child at a time and keeping them
separate? Not like, but he kept them organized in different groups. Yeah. So he prohibited all kinds of relations among adult women and men and segregated the living quarters of each sex. So with that kind of, you know,
crazed control parameters. Yeah. But also, how is he going to continue with his, how is he going to grow the community?
Well, people were still coming over.
Oh,
I see. Like they were, the thing was, I suppose the Germans wanted these colonies and whatever new societies and new towns to be set up to be seen as well run and
Yeah.
You know, like I just imagine that they were back in Germany being like, this is a great place to go to.
Clean streets.
Clean. Everyone it's
doing
nice.
What they're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's all good.
I'd say like the vibe in Germany back in the late 60s and stuff, like the hangover from what happened.
Morale was low, I'm sure.
Probably a low ebb.
Yeah.
And like just the whole kind of, like they talked a lot about the kind of generational guilt and things like that, which is sad and interesting. But like, yeah, them just actually trying to put Germany behind them maybe might have been kind of. Yeah,
and most people living would have been involved or played an active role.
Yeah.
So we're only how many years past the end of World War II? In the 60s.
So like less than, we're still like 7-8 years post World War II, right? And like you consider,
I don't think it's accurate though that like most people would have had involvement, but I think that there would have been a lot of people just kind of held to ransom by Hitler and his followers.
Yeah.
And there would probably have been a lot of like people who felt really helpless rather than being actively involved.
But members of the family, sure. Like fathers, grandfathers. So that's 1945. It ends. This is the early 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's still very close time wise.
And he's also doing other bits behind the scenes. Like he's brainwashing essentially his congregation to believe that everyone is inherently sinful, particularly women. And they were plagued by sexuality. So this justified them being separated from men. And he also...
He obviously hasn't heard of the other thing.
he sort of dictated who could form romantic relations and as far as saying when to get married and have children. So most of the time, conceptions of the family inside the colony were based not on genetics, but on loyalty to...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Schaefer, who self-identified as the permanent uncle. So when a child was born, when a child was born, it would not stay with its biological parents, but rather be raised by nurses in a group called the babies. Then every stage of life was categorized like this. So there was the following stages were the wedges, which were children up to the age of 15. Then there was the army of salvation, the elder servants by age 30. And lastly, by age 50, there was the comalos.
So what the fuck?
It was about giving people these exact roles within the colony and the order. So the inhabitants were then living in groups of six, all kind of wearing similar German 30 styles clothing. Each person was working 12 hours a day, receiving no payment, but would happy to do so because they were so dedicated to the cause of the colony, you know, this idea of like we're all rising together. The colony then also started supporting rural families through free education and health services. And this ultimately created a support in case the colony was attacked. So like for families that were slightly outside the colony. And there has been rumors and suggestions and reports in years that followed that what they were actually doing with those rural families were taking in children and having them illegally adopted. Just a classic power corrupts. But from the outside, again, this all seemed like the colony was made up of hygienic, hardworking individuals who led a very structured and promising life. One of the things that they did do, though, was they brought over a German stone crusher, which he used in an quarry, which this is how they became such a profitable business with Chileans. So after 6 years, the first 6 years in the colony, wheat was able to be harvested. And what had started as like barracks became houses, you know, a small hospital became a big hospital. When Chilean children then were treated and survived, their rescue brought fame to Schaefer and the colony, okay, you know. So the Chilean people surrounding them were like, this is fantastic.
Good guy, Schaefer.
Yeah. Now, in 1966, something happens to Schaefer. So he's out and he's on like a nocturnal hunt with a gun, and there's an accident. So he ends up having to get treated in the Santiago hospital for several months. And upon his return, he becomes much stricter. So I guess while he's away, things become a little loosey-goosey. Yeah, he's known as a clumsy.
This is the second own goal.
Yeah.
With the eye being the first.
Yeah. So when he comes back from this, then he forbids all festivities and is really strict on the separation between the sexes.
He's like, I'm having a shit time. With my gunshot, everyone's having a shit time.
It is probably the case. He got back and things had loosened up a bit in his absence.
Yeah.
There'd been some sex, partying.
Yeah.
He was like, fuck this.
But at this time, there is a teenager called Wolfgang Nies who manages to escape the colony, yes, and get back to Germany. And he says Schaefer is an abuser,
Peter,
and that he has... that he sexually abused him.
Yeah.
But then Schaefer enlists the help of a teen named Harmut Hopp to run a smear campaign against Nies in return for Hopp being able to study medicine. So there's this kind of like, he's too powerful now. Yeah, exactly. So.
But there's a rumble.
There's a rumble, right? Now, then Chile's going through its own political unrest. So a dictatorship. It goes under dictatorship, a military dictatorship from 1973 to 1990 under the dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet. Mm-hmm. And this is where it benefits both this kind of dictator and this bad man to work
together
in cahoots. Mm-hmm. So Colonia Dignidad becomes essentially a torture center.
Oh my God.
So experiments in torture start being carried out. Prisoners are being tortured in tunnels underneath the colony. They're interrogated to gain an understanding of their personality in order to gauge the appropriate torture technique.
Oh my God.
And it's...
just covered in spiders.
Yeah. As many as 100 citizens, local citizens, are taken to the colony by the... Dina, which is like the direction.
Local citizens, members of the commune or no?
No.
Okay.
Chilean people who were taken into the colony and then tortured, murdered. So these are the ones that were known of in the kind of initial stages. But since report, like in later years, there's up to 1,100 people known as the disappeared people in Chile who are suspected to have been taken to the colony and tortured to death.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of how big the colony is in numbers at this stage?
Oh, I'm not sure in numbers, but it's massive in terms of like land area, you know.
To try and describe what Sophie's doing is too difficult.
Sophie's so
she's
into her
crackling noises here. Sorry. She's crafting away and she's had to open a small crackly package. And now she's going to pour the little crystals into the boat so she can pick it up with her little waxen end. and stamp it down.
What is this activity called? What's the name of it?
I don't know.
You're vajazzling a card.
It's vajazzling. Yes, exactly.
It's basically like pain point numbers, but instead you have very tiny little gems and you get to stick it onto a piece of card to make a really nice picture. In this instance, a panda hugging her young. Oh no, I lost a gem.
Turn it over. It might have the name of it. Crystal art kit.
Crystal art kit.
It's beautiful.
Kit. And basically, I don't know. I am neurodivergent in some way. I don't know what it is. It's the mania. It's whatever it
she
is.
Must
and
be
the
moving.
girls need to keep me subdued with activities while I enjoy my stories.
Wrapped in a blanket, just bejazzling your card, having a happy old time of it.
Tell me how many, like, how big was this? Do we know?
I'll look that up in a second, but it is hundreds of people, right?
Hundreds, but not hundreds of thousands.
I mean, I don't know, to be honest, because when it gets into the point, yeah, where they're sending people in from local colonies or they're sending in local citizens, it could be growing pretty rapidly. So some defectors from the colony have since portrayed it as a cult in which Paul Schaefer had the ultimate power. They claimed that residents were never allowed to leave the colony, that they were strictly segregated. Television, telephones and calendars were banned. Residents worked wearing peasant garb and sang German folk songs. Sex was completely banned. Some residents were forced to take drugs to reduce their desires. Drugs were also administered as a form of sedation,
crack,
mostly to young girls.
Vacuum.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
But to males as well. Severe discipline in the forms of beating and torture were commonplace, and that Schaefer insisted constantly that discipline was spiritually enriching. One of the first instances of abuse allegations was from that escapee who had been 16 when he came to the colony, and he claimed that he was forced into slave labor, received regular harsh beatings and was molested by Schaefer on multiple occasions.
Jesus Christ.
And he came out and said that there was loads of former Nazis being part of the colony again.
Part of the club.
Yeah. So, like, the thing was that allowed this to continue was that on multiple times, politicians and, you know, different world leaders were invited to the colony and they would leave, being like, this is the, this is a perfect model of how society should run. Mm. But obviously, he, like, toned down the abuse when they were over. There's other allegations, such as electric shock treatment to children, including on their genitalia, to keep them in line.
Oh my God.
So the Chilean dictator Pinochet visited in 1974, went to the colony, and there he admired what Schaefer was doing so much that he granted him the right to start digging for gold and uranium. In return, Schaefer bought him a Mercedes-Benz limousine.
Hmm.
And also, because there was a US weapon embargo against Chile, Schaefer was able to deal with Germans who supplied Pinochet with weapons, including rockets, tanks and equipment to produce biological weapons. So because parts of the colony were deemed to be charitable organizations, he realized that their shipments in weren't necessarily being checked. So he was able to bring in guns. In 1976, the UN published a report about Pinochet, and Amnesty International found evidence of torture at the colony, which was later verified by the Chilean National Commission for Trust. Just nothing was done about it at the time. So towards the late 70s, the German embassy could no longer, I guess, ignore the reports. And they sent a delegation to visit the colony, but said that the suspicions were without evidence. A delegation visited and were greeted with like folk dances and music and food
German
and celebration.
Yeah. So all their like outfits were super like probably.
So it's like going to the Gaeltacht in like fucking Tasmania.
Yeah. Like there might have been some kind of weird like nostalgia kind of harking back to the kind of simpler days for the people coming in to visit. And were people defecting much?
Yeah, there were a couple of people defecting and going back to Germany and basically saying that like something had to be done about this.
Of course, like that kid.
Yeah. And yeah. It takes years for anything to be taken seriously. And what's happening is that the Germans are sending over people. Like they sent over a man called Norbert Blum in 1986. And Pinochet didn't allow him to go visit the colony, but he still came back to Germany and said it was a model farm, like to be admired by all of mankind.
can't believe it's 1986 now.
Yeah, like this goes into the, it goes into the early 90s. So by 1988, then the German Attorney General finally started proceedings against members of the colony and saying we can't ignore this anymore. In 1990, Pinochet steps down and Patricio Alwyn cut off state funding to Schaefer's Hospital, revoking its non-profit and charitable status and started auditing the colony's businesses.
Amazing.
Yeah.
At this point, we have people who have been born in the colony.
Yeah.
Raised that way.
Yeah. Adults.
Adults.
Local Chilean people. Totally indoctrinated. Like this is, I think, like the equivalent of the kind of abuses of the just... how complicit the Chilean government was with this torture camp and how many people disappeared here, forced adoptions, all that kind of stuff. It's like one of their...
familiar.
Yeah, it's one of their...
similar to ourselves.
The Irish Church. Mm. Yeah. So by 1991, though, Schaefer had started privatizing the various enterprises that were happening in the colony. And so when the German Chancellor Helmut Kohl visited Chile in, I think it was the same year, he said that Chile needed to open the colony, but nothing further. Schaefer then mobilized local residents to demonstrate against the closing of his hospital until the Chilean government agreed to reopen it. Chilean children were then admitted to the colony, as the colony itself had no offspring because of this, the total sex ban.
Oh.
And it was then that Schaefer started molesting Chilean children, specifically Chilean boys. Yeah. And when they resisted, he used sedatives prescribed by the colony's only physician, Harmit Hop, the teenager that he had allowed
to study medicine if he organized a smear campaign against one of his first
defectors. Yeah.
Jesus.
So after 26 children who attended the commune's free clinic and school reported their abuse, a judge in Santiago issued a warrant for Schaefer's arrest 6 years into kind of Chile's democratic transition. Mm. So
in Chile's defense here, they've been through a lot.
They had a lot going on.
Yeah.
And during the Pinochet's dictatorship, there were a lot of crimes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot going on.
Disappeared people. Absolutely. And yeah.
So this guy Schaefer was, like you said originally, it wasn't, again, he was in a kind of another good situation. Like Germany post-war, he wasn't of high importance.
Yeah. And he's been, he's been advised by all of these bad men all of the time, comes into contact. It's like one of those classic creeps where he just coincidentally meets people along the way who can help him be worse than he already
is. That's interesting. Mm. Is it a coincidence? It's like the Nickelodeon productions. Like what a coincidence that three pedophiles had found each other. Mm. It's never a fucking coincidence.
Yeah.
There is... like, it's no coincidence that these bad men, like, come together. They seek each other out. They've got their little codes. They find out about each other. And it's in their interest that they stay together.
Yeah.
They travel in packs. Just happens. Badness.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate that he was a bad man in Germany and was able to thrive again in another very vulnerable country.
So 6 years into the democratization of Chile's new government, they
issue a warrant. So we're in the 90s, early 90s. So he's been over in the colony's been going for like 30 odd years. But it's the Chilean children reporting abuse, which again, fantastic, that the judge takes it seriously and issues a warrant for his arrest. But when police go to find him, he couldn't be found on the compound. So children were continuing to attend the boarding school, but the support of the local parents started to dwindle because they obviously stopped sending their kids to the school and to the hospital amidst these allegations of abuse. Schaefer was creating these propaganda campaigns, teary-eyed, looking at the departures of people and trying to prove his innocence. He finally then staged a farewell ceremony and disappeared into a network of tunnels and bunkers under the colony.
Where all the torture had originally took place.
Yes.
You'd have to wonder why those tunnels were built originally.
Well, part of the torture, and I guess he always knew he'd need to... He had, bear in mind, arrived in Chile because he'd escaped Germany after sexual abuse allegations. So he knew he was going to have to run at some point, I imagine. So in 1997, when he finally disappears, escaping the child sex abuse charges. In July 1997, two boys fled to the German embassy. One of them, Tobias Müller, was flown out to Germany, and Schaefer was tried in absence. And in late 2004, the Chilean court found him guilty. So he went under investigation. He also went under investigation in connection with the disappearance of a Russian mathematician called Boris Weisfeiler. So Boris was basically out in Chile. He was a really experienced hiker, loved an old hike, and he went out, and it's believed that he stumbled across the colony, was taken in, tortured and killed within there. But it was a kind of, because he was a Russian, very well-known Russian mathematician, that was particularly... It just put the colony on the world agenda, I guess, as a bit of a suspicious thing. But nothing was, there was notes or something discovered in the colony, because for a while they kept files on everyone. For like a really short period of time, they kept these torture files. And I think they found some of Boris's stuff within the colony. But then also people said it was very easy to dismiss his disappearance as a hiking accident that had happened amongst the, you know, rural Chilean mountains, wherever it was. In 2005, then, like, so this goes on for years, and it turns out that he's wanted in so many different places for child abuse allegations, including in France in 2005.
My God.
He has yet to...
victims must number in the...
hundreds,
maybe. Hundreds.
And what age is he in 2005?
We'll have to confirm. Oh, so he's in 2005, he's 83.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Still, Bracker is just resigning.
I know. I saw it.
What?
Sorry. Breaking news as of now, few days before you're listening.
Sorry. I'm actually nearly done on this.
It's absolutely insane.
The man is 85, never has created a successful cult, continued to abuse children all the way. In fact, created
motivated by his, like, I think entirely motivated.
The children away from
I think
adults.
Everything he has done has been motivated by his desire to abuse young boys.
Yeah, Jesus.
Even like the building, like what an elaborate, like building of a very successful hospital to bring in local Chilean people, but completely underestimating.
Jimmy Savile himself all around the place.
Yeah. So in March 2005, then he's found 8 years after his disappearance, hiding in a townhouse in an expensive gated community in Argentina. And after 2 days of negotiations between Chile and Argentinian authorities, he's extradited to Chile to face a court hearing. There, he was charged with being involved in another disappearance of a political activist called Juan Manino. So in July 2005, then they unearthed his buried military weaponry, much of it World War II vintage, including grenades and machine guns that were produced by the colony. So one of the things he did during his time in running the colony and his strong links with Germany was that he got weapons sent over, sort of deconstructed them, taught the colony how to produce them, and then was providing the Chilean government and, you know, Chilean, the Chilean dictator with this kind of weaponry and then a means to produce it as well. So it took until 2006 for him to be sentenced to 20 years in jail for sexually abusing 25 children. He was ordered to pay 770 million pesos to 11 minors whose representatives had filed claims against him. He was found guilty of a further 20 counts of dishonest abuses, 5 counts of child rape, all committed between 1993 and 1997. So he's not even being charged with his abuses before that.
It's just a fraction of it, God.
Yeah. But he died then in 2010. So he only served like max 4 years.
Do we have any first person accounts? I'm sure there's loads.
There's loads, and there's loads of Chilean men who talk about
now, but were victims of his.
Yeah, there's loads. There's thousands upon thousands upon thousands of victims here in this colony. But I think, to be honest with you, they're still unpacking. The colony is still there, without him in it. And so what because does it, look it was a privatized, like because it's still a very like profitable farmland and there's still the hospital and the school. And I think
and they had permission to do the mining.
Yeah. So I need to like, more on like what they're doing now. No, it's like,
but maybe it was like with Scientology that they kind of like had a succession plan for after.
Sounds like probably. It's like,
what's your man?
Oh God.
McSavage. Miscavige or something like that. Anyway, yeah, like, because it has to be, there has to be some kind of governance within it still.
And would Schaefer, how do you say his name again?
Schaefer
have left without a plan for its succession?
I'm sure there were people who were like his right hands and like facilitating his abuse and all kinds of stuff. People he stepped in.
Like the doctor who he had abused and indoctrinated and now are sort of behaving in a similar fashion.
Today it's mainly it's still there, but it's used as it changed its name. So there's so much history on this, but it became a museum and tourist destination now. But it did for a while after he left operate still as a colony because he privatized it. Some people were given, you know, they started running it as a business. A fascinating, horrendous sounding place. Some people call it the worst cult of all time.
Yeah. Ooh. It's really up there. I've never heard of it.
Never heard of it. Incredible.
There you go.
Cassie, thank you.
Jesus.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Bloody.
Are you a bit spinning? You know the way it's you get a good story and you're like, oh.
When it's just like abuse of that magnitude, the scale of it, like. I mean, it's hard to fathom, isn't it?
Well, it is church adjacent.
Sadly. So thank you for that misery, Cassandra Delaney.
An absolute whopper. That's going to stay with me.
Sorry, and I know it was like a whistle stop tour of something that was obviously very traumatic, but
I guess
it's like any of these things, it's just worth acknowledging. I mean, I had never heard of that.
Me neither. Maybe if we lived in Chile, we would have.
Of course we would have. But like, I mean, I think the world has acknowledged a lot of the bad shit that has occurred in Ireland.
But maybe the average Chilean podcaster would not know about Tume. And I wouldn't expect them to.
Well, anyway.
Little bit from Patreon Corner. Some very, very fun comments on last week's episodes. So this is an episode that contains Middleton frenzy, noises, an iron lung and a cat panic. Mm. And as one creep who is one of my friends said in a WhatsApp, lot of cork slander.
There was a lot of cork slander in that
was a lot of cork slander. I jumped their defense.
Victimized. They fucking love it.
Let's not start it again.
Yeah. Okay. So on the subject of cults, Cara gets in touch. I just thought I'd let you all know that apparently the gossip around my village, brackets very, very rural, is that a cult has moved into one of the big houses that sold last year. I will have to find out more and send it in, but it's so crazy and I had to share.
You need please to send it
our way.
Do you know what happened there, I'd say?
It's just a rental crisis.
Exactly.
And it's actually not a cult. It's just a load of people aged 18 to 34. 68% of people between the ages of 18 and 34 live with their parents in this country.
Fucking
that's exactly
hell.
What
isn't that insane
there.
Now it did make me feel better.
Yep.
Because it's like, you always want to be in the minority. Let's not get into it, but you always want to be in the minority.
Majority rules.
Majora, labia majora.
So that person who wrote in to say about that cult needs to give us more information, or even better, do a little recce and give us like, we need kind of like, we need identifying factors.
Even
people that move
better,
in.
Do a solid
TikTok account.
Undercover, join the cult, report back.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Or you know what? I need somewhere to live. I will join the cult and report back. Just send me the address.
Send the addy to Cassie. She needs a place. We've got Dakota saying Kate Middleton is in her Gone Girl era.
She certainly is.
Dakota also shares a creep of the week in Germany. It's the guy who is reporting illegally parked cars as a hobby.
That's me.
And whose goal is to do so all over the country.
Lol.
I followed the Reddit link. I don't think we need to know much more except
that I'm excited.
This absolute melt is
me.
You. Few people asking about the cathedral soundscape of last week's Patreon. And
what's with the Windows 2000 cathedral soundscape?
Sorry, we're in a large room.
We were in a large room and I didn't, I thought I sort of tweaked it. Oh, did you? I popped up the Hive. I'm sorry, I didn't do anything to it. But for the main episode, I think I took away the cathedral soundscape. I think it added something.
You got a treat.
Was it bad? Yeah. Sorry about it. Very it was such fun. A gorgeous room. I can't promise we won't record in there again.
And this is amazing from Trina. I think, okay, so there was a point in time where we were trying to describe the hair of an individual. And somebody was reaching for Bob Ross.
Uh-huh.
And then and somebody else was thinking it was Ralph Harris, and thus Bob Harris was born. And Trina says, I think maybe Bob Harris was a crossover between Bob Ross and Ralph Harris. And given he's quite the creep himself, your brain was on point. Thank you, Trina. Here we go, Claire. Thank you for covering the Kate stuff in such detail. I'm living for the goss, but don't want to have all that shite on my algorithm. You guys are the best. Thank you. And then this is Kathleen saying about looking up the Neanderthal high-pitched voice video, which we did indeed look up.
That will be on the Patreon right now.
Patreon.
So
it's earlier in this very episode.
No.
No. Another episode.
This is a main episode.
We are
it's hard to keep track,
isn't it?
Guys.
What we love to do, you see, behind the scenes in the organization is we just turn on the mics and start talking shit.
Stop. And then we work backwards.
They know that.
And then they've we listened. Figure it out.
And then a very important on pork parasite corner. So last week's Patreon featured, obviously, unsurprisingly, parasite caused by pork. Jenny gets in touch.
Jenny. Our Jenny.
Jenny, who is
our
artistic director of the creep.
Exactly.
She's
loads
wonderful.
Of our merch. She's so talented. So she says, just on the pork parasite talk, not so fun fact. I grew up eating raw sausages and black and white pudding. We used to snack on them while my mom would be making dinner or supper.
I've heard that before, the raw sausages.
I sent you a video of it. There's a video of two farmer lads at a...
Is that the ploughing?
At the ploughing. And one of them is eating raw sausages. And I'd never seen anything like it. And I'm amazed that Jenny is... I replied to her saying, you are full of tapeworms. Did a tapeworm write this comment? Jenny, get yourself checked, will you?
I wonder what they
taste
like. Oh my God.
They're mostly
somebody
bread.
Somebody captioned that raw sausage eating farmer. So this lad needs a wife. Oh, yeah. You can look it up on YouTube. It's called
Farmer
Man Eats Raw Sausage.
All right. You get it.
It's so hardcore. He's just clutching. Just clutching a clutch of raw sausages. They're attached to each other.
I know. It's like a string
of
sausages.
Pulling them off. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, get what you ask for. Thank you very much. Remember thanks for coming. Patreon. Thanks for supporting
us. Thank you for
thanks
supporting
for
us as always.
And we'll see you soon.
Wow.
Bye.
I'm now watching a man eat.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.